RadioInfluence.com.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
All right, and here we go. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I am Jeff Crushell, and this is Crush Performance. We're your weekly source for performance information. The website, crushperformance.com. You can get our blogs, our podcasts. All of our links are up there. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush. And on Facebook, you can get to us at the Talent Grid, which is our performance group. Just sharing great information there. Sign up. We'll let you in. And listen, if you have any ideas, any topics you'd like us to investigate or discuss, let us know. Write to us, info@crushperformance.com. We'll look into it, and, you know, if we like it, we may dedicate a segment or an entire show to your topic. So let us know, because, you know, there's so many things going on in the world of performance. Today is no exception. We're coming off a fantastic show from last week. We spoke with John O'Sullivan, the founder and CEO of Changing the Game Project, just talking about keeping athletes involved in sport, yes, through the developmental ages, yes, if they want to go pro, pursue their dream of chasing down the higher levels of sport, but also just participation for life. When we hear numbers like 7 of 10 kids are dropping out of organized sport by the age of 13, listen, we know there's a problem. But here's the thing with problems. If you don't really understand what the problem is, if you don't know what the problem is, you can't fix it. In our programs, we have a saying, a problem accurately defined is already partially solved. And it's true for almost everything that we're confronted with. If you can accurately define the issue or the problem that you're facing, you have a good shot at fixing it. Well, that's what happened last week as we talked with John O'Sullivan. We looked at why kids are dropping out of sport. And more importantly, we looked at why kids are playing in the first place. And it doesn't take a genius intellect or a bunch of statistics and data to figure out why kids play. All you have to do is think back to when you were a kid. Why did you go out and play? Why did you get with your buddies? Why did you go play by yourself? Why did you get a ball and throw it against a wall? Why did you go out and just pretend and climb trees? Because it was fun. And that's the number one reason that kids play. They want to have fun. They want to get with their friends, and they want to participate. And a lot of times, they want to participate in something that's bigger than them, something with some meaning, something that allows them to work towards a goal and objective with others. That's what it's all about. Unfortunately, the way we've twisted developmental sport and put pressure on kids to achieve and succeed at such an early age, we've virtually broken the system. But it's not too late. With coaching education, great programs for parents of developing athletes, and great organizations out there helping to steer the way, we can turn this around, no question. We can keep kids involved. And, you know, one of the great byproducts of a good developmental system is just this tributary or this spin-off of great high-performance athletes. If a young athlete decides they want to chase down the dream of high-performance sports, well, you know what? In a good, balanced organizational model, that happens way more often than trying to rush and force kids through the system before they're ready. So today, we're going to continue this conversation. Two great guests today. We're going to speak with Manny Schmidt, the founder of Link Management International, to get the perspective and insights from the agent side of sport. They have a great holistic approach to long-term development because it is a long-term process. So we're going to get a very good look from the agency side of sport. And we're also going to talk to Paul Carson, the Vice President of Membership Development for Hockey Canada. Hockey Canada is one of the leading organizations in the world when it comes to innovation and the developmental process for their members, young and old, male and female. So a great conversation coming up later in the show. Right after the break, we will be joined by Manny Schmidt of Link Management to get a look at the agent side of sport performance and athlete development. So stick around. A really, really important conversation right after this on Crush Performance.
Radio Influence brings you the best in digital media broadcasting. When it comes to sports, we've got experts like national sports radio host Rich Herrera, the fabulous sports babe, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy. Want a good laugh? Then go on the beach with Pants and Roller Girl, or just LOL with Nancy Alexander. And when it comes to real life, Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger and Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill will make you think. When it comes to what you want, Radio Influence has you covered. Find our programming on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at CrushPerformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Kreshel. We are your weekly source for performance information. If you want to reach out to us, do so. CrushPerformance.com. You can get our blogs, our links. You can get the podcast there as well. You can write to us, info@CrushPerformance.com. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook, you can go to Crush Performance or join our group called The Talent Grid. Today, we continue our discussion on the process of development. What's important, what's not important, and what does the process of development look like? To give us some perspective and insights from the player management side of this issue, we're joined now by Crush favorite Manny Schmidt of Link Management International. Manny, thanks for joining us today.
Jeff, always awesome to be on with you and to reconnect.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We've been looking forward to this conversation actually for the last few months or so. A lot's been going on in the sporting world. Of course, you guys are NHL certified agents dealing in the hockey world predominantly, and there's a lot going on in the hockey world. Boy, oh boy, I tell you, we have the NHL playoffs going deep here. Fantastic series with Pittsburgh and Ottawa. The Oilers going deep. Game sevens, overtime. This playoffs in hockey's really, really been a great show this spring so far. Manny, what does the NHL game mean to the developmental levels of hockey? We know that these showings, you know, these teams going deep and these great games that we're seeing in the playoffs, that certainly has to influence, you know, young players' dreams of chasing down the dream, I suppose, one day.
Absolutely. You know, I think what the NHL playoffs especially provide is the, you know, the redefined benchmarks all the time, right? The teams that win all of a sudden sort of allow other teams, other players to sort of hit the reset button and go, okay, how do they do it? And is there a different model there that we need to be aware of and or incorporate into our strategies, right? So the goal is always to reach the pinnacle of the game, and when certain players and teams do it, it forces everybody else to evaluate where they're at and how they get there. So when it looks look when you look at player development or team development, team success, playoffs are always the benchmark to assess yourself as.
Manny, one of the things that's always impressed me about Link Management is your emphasis on player development. You have young players in your fold that you help counsel and guide them and their families. You've got pro players in the fold helping to guide their careers. When these young players see, you know, these great performances, the goals, the overtime, you know, game seven after game seven after game seven, what does that do for an athlete who's already in the pipeline? It has to be incredibly motivating. I mean, I've seen it, but for your guys, this is a pretty special time, I think.
Well, absolutely. It makes you it's the motivating factor, right? It helps define the dream, so to speak. Now, what it does is it gets guys excited, but it's also a reminder that there's a very limited number of players that ever get to reach that pinnacle of the game. And so it allows for discussions to take place as to, well, what do you need to do to get there? And what is the journey to get there, not what is the success we need tomorrow to get there?
I like that approach, Manny, because it is a process. You know, later in the show, we're going to be talking to Paul Carson, the Vice President of Membership Development for Hockey Canada. And Hockey Canada actually is taking a very innovative approach. I mean, they've always been cutting edge right from the get-go. You know, whether we talk about, you know, the banning of body checking, you know, we're starting to see players from that era now enter, you know, the higher end of the game and even into the NHL when everybody thought it would be devastating for player performance. It turns out to be quite a good move. You know, we're talking to them again about some of the new innovations in developing young players, like the cross ice program, you know, where we're cutting the ice in half for the younger kids so they can have a more realistic type of game. The game is constantly changing at every single level. But one thing that doesn't change, there's only so many spots to play at the top. It's a really important concept that you just mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, we look at it as, and you know, a lot of people refer to it as the funnel effect. And, you know, the further along you go in your hockey career, and frankly, in your sport career, no matter what sport it is, the funnel gets tighter and tighter and tighter. So when you start thinking about the fact that, you know, at the NHL level, there are just over, you know, 700 players on the planet that can play at that level. And so that's a pretty tight funnel. So how, you know, what do you need to do and how do you become one of those 700 potentially? And that isn't something that happens overnight. And so that's why we put such a, you know, important emphasis on long-term development, but also on the strategy of at some point that game will end, and it may end well before you ever reach that point. And so how are you using sport to create some success in life, not just focusing everything on the sport journey?
Yeah, it's so important to take that holistic approach. And again, that's something you guys do over at Link Management. We're talking with Manny Schmidt of Link Management International. Well, Manny, a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about. You know, we look at a young career and sort of that roadmap, that progression, and, you know, moving along the timeline towards chasing down that dream. And there's some big milestones, as we talked about in previous shows, for young players. One of them has just come up. It's the Bantam Draft. And you know, for maybe parents and non-hockey families who are listening today, we could talk a bit about the Bantam Draft, what it means and what it's all about. I have mixed feelings, Manny, I'm not going to lie, about the Bantam Draft and what it represents. If I look at how many players who have been selected high in the Bantam Draft that have actually gone on to have success in the game, the number's very, very, very low. So I actually wanted to get your impressions of the Bantam Draft and what it's all about and what it might mean for a young player and their families.
Yeah, good point, Jeff. You know, the Bantam Draft certainly has a place, and it provides a critical milestone marker for players along that process. It helps you assess to some degree where you're at, but by no means is it a definitive marker in terms of long-term athlete success or athlete development. You know, when you really try to put it into perspective, you have a 14, 15-year-old athlete that you're trying to project long-term success on. And we know by the science of sport and the studies that have been done that the definitive success is measured way later than at 14. So, we use it from our standpoint in our agency. We say there are primary milestone markers and then just unique milestone markers. And for us, we don't even see the Bantam Draft as a primary marker. those come later on. But, you know, with that said, we do need to be aware of it. We do need to help educate and understand and help families and players understand the rationale behind it, the place it plays, and the value it has in the success. But it certainly doesn't define a journey or a player's success. Depending on where you may get drafted or whether you get drafted at all at the Bantam Draft. The other thing to think about is, you know, within Western Canada and the WHL, they're even more uniquely different than the other major junior leagues, where they draft basically as a 15, 16-year-old. So they actually have a year later, whereas in the WHL, our guys here, they get drafted, you know, coming out of Bantam. So that makes it even more difficult here in you know, as part of the Western League versus the OHL or the Q.
No, it's interesting, and I think you made a very interesting point there. Whether you're drafted or not, there's things to take away from that, you know, sort of, as you mentioned, that milestone or that event, so to speak, which is the Bantam draft. There's so many variables involved as to whether a player is ready or what a player will look like when they're 23 years of age, that the Bantam draft seems really insignificant. But I get it, you know. If we talk about the junior national team, for example, in any sport, in any country, you know, that junior national team is going to select players that are ready, you know, inside of that window at that particular time. Just because you don't make a junior national team doesn't mean that you won't go on to achieve greatness in sport. Let's get that perfectly clear. So I think that's kind of the same circumstance we see with drafts like the Bantam draft or events like the Bantam draft.
Yeah, and I think the other thing you'll know is it shows itself on both ends of the spectrum. Where you may have, you know, there's a lot of players that have been drafted very high that ultimately will never pan out. They'll never play a single game of pro. And I know you and I have talked about this in the past, maybe even on the show, the number of players that are drafted at a very high, you know, high round or even early in the first round that, you know, how many games of NHL they actually play versus players that may never have been drafted or been drafted very, very late that have great careers in the NHL. So, you know, I think there are those arguments on both sides that being selected early doesn't necessarily define that you will play or have a long-term pro career, or not being drafted at all doesn't actually define that you're not going to play either.
Right. And that's a real important message to send to everybody out there. And I know that for families who are selected and families who aren't selected, it can be a pretty emotional time. And I've seen you deal with that directly. And, you know, that's just maybe a bit of education.
Yeah, education and perspective.
Right. Good call. And, yeah.
There's a lot of families, you know, I mean, sport is such a, you know, what are the Joneses doing and what have the Joneses got, right? And so when my good friend gets drafted early and I don't, well, what does that say about me? And what does that say about our family? And so those conversations take place. And that's where trying to inject some perspective into the situation, into the conversation is really critical. And that you refocus that, you know, here is this longer term strategy that we need to focus on. And more importantly, I think keeping the message clear that ultimately what we're trying to do is having these players and families use sport to create success in life. And so whether you're selected early or selected at all, you still have an opportunity to use the benefit and the gift of sport to create some life success. Because again, so few people ever make it to that pinnacle of sport, but you certainly can use that sport to benefit you in other ways in life as well.
Oh man, there's so many takeaways. You're so right. We're talking with Manny Schmidt of Link Management International. Manny, that's a strong message to send. And, you know, we've seen athletes, even as they, you know, work on their career and their progress inside of sport, once they get a backup plan, it sort of frees them up to, you know, focus more on their sport rather than worry what might go wrong if sport doesn't work out. So, you know, this conversation can get very, very deep, but there's also some real life applications for, you know, looking at the other avenues that make these holistic people rather than just the athlete, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We're finding that more and more, even dealing with retired pros. And individuals saying, geez, if I would have just thought about this a little more during my career, I would have been so much further ahead at this point, right? And I think that's part of the message that we've got to ingrain in the athlete's mindset and their journey is at some point this is going to end. So let's make the most of what we have now, but also figure how do we use this to ensure that we have a smooth transition and be able to use the successes we've gained through the journey of sport into successes in life generally.
Yeah, fantastic, Manny. A couple minutes left. You know, I just wanted to get to this point before we let you go here. But, you know, the landscape of sport is changing in a very rapid fashion. We know that skill and talent is incredibly important. At the root of everything, you have to have it if you're going to succeed at the highest levels of the game. And I'm talking about, you know, chasing down the dream. We definitely know that some of the fringe benefits and things we learn around sport can help you in a career, you know, or in other areas of your life, most certainly. But inside of sport, it's interesting to see sort of a change in focus. Where, you know, the character, the personality, you know, words like grit, perseverance, and compete levels are coming into play. And you and I have talked about this before, but I think this year, you know, as the winter sports come to a close and the summer sports are opening up, we're starting to see a real change in the sporting landscape where there's more and more emphasis on the character of the person. Because let's face it, we know if a person has the interest, the genetics, and the wherewithal, we can create great talent and skills, but it's very difficult to really hone in and map out a plan for developing character, I guess.
Yeah, no question. If there is, I would venture to say, Jeff, that there is no single factor that has become more important for professional teams than the assessment and evaluation of character of players. You know, we have a number of players that are getting ready for the NHL draft here in 4 weeks. And I would say that the predominant conversations that we're having with the NHL teams is around the character definition of our players. That's what they're zeroing in on. I mean, their scouts see on a day-to-day basis during the season when they're doing their evaluations and reports of the players on the ice. They're assessing skill. They're assessing the attributes of skill and success inside the game. What they're now really looking to try to determine and define is how is the character of that player rooted inside of that skill, and how does the character of that player drive that skill set? How are they going to contribute in the locker room? How are they going to contribute in the community? And so the majority of my conversations that I'm having right now with our, you know, with the pro teams is strictly around character of the individual, character of the family, the attributes that the player brings outside of the arena of, you know, of sport, but more in life general.
Oh, so important, Manny, so important. And let's face it, if you get in the right environment, you know, they called them the intangibles, and I'm a firm believer that the intangibles are not so intangible. These are things that we can train and develop as long as we're aware of them, right? I mean, it's changing as well.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. We had a conversation just yesterday with a team, and almost exclusively they asked about, you know, the compete factor. How do they work out in the gym? What do they contribute when they face adversity? And then the conversation went towards the training that the players do around dealing with adversity, dealing with leadership development. That's why, you know, on our standpoint, we have formally incorporated a director of mental performance into our agency. His sole purpose is to work with each of our players on leadership development, mindset development, and character development with all of our players, because it isn't just an intangible anymore. It is becoming a very tangible asset that actually can be measured, can be developed, and actually sets you apart in the game.
Great stuff, Manny Schmidt. Hey, we're out of time, but listen, as the amateur draft for the NHL approaches, let's touch base after that just to see how it goes and talk about the importance of what we just mentioned, the intangibles, in the big picture when it comes to the higher levels of the game. How does that sound?
I would love to do that, and as always, anytime I can be on with you, I consider it an honor.
There you go. A very interesting perspective from the player management side. And the guys over at Link, they do it right. They really, really manage their athletes, look at the holistic approach to career development, and they also look at the holistic approach to developing the individual. So fantastic. And there's a lot to be learned there. Well, we know that environment really does influence the process of development. And coming up after the break, we'll talk to the stewards of one of the great sporting organizations on the planet right now. We'll be joined by Paul Carson, the Vice President of Membership Development for Hockey Canada, about some of their new initiatives, some of their innovative changes that have happened over the past little while, and we're going to see where they're at and where they're going as the future of hockey unfolds right after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Crush Performance. Thanks for tuning in today, everybody. I am Jeff Kershaw, and we are your weekly source for performance information. Today, we're continuing our discussion on the developmental process and how do we go about maximizing development, but more importantly, how do we keep our young athletes in the game and participating for life? We know the process of development takes time, and this is one of the issues that we're seeing in this peak by Friday society that we're living in today. To take a step back and just enjoy the process. Well, along the way, one thing's for certain, it's got to be fun or kids aren't going to play. Second, if we're not making progress and kids aren't getting better, they're not going to play. And there's a fine balance between those two and many other factors. And there's few organizations on the planet who are as good at balancing and working in all of the factors involved in development, and at the same time innovating and looking for new and better ways to get it done than the good people at Hockey Canada. Hockey Canada has set some standards that every single sport has looked at or should look at in terms of the developmental process for lifelong participation. And we're joined now by Paul Carson, the Vice President of Membership Development for Hockey Canada. Paul, thanks for joining us today all the way from Newfoundland as you guys get set for your annual meetings.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity, Jeff. It's always a pleasure.
Listen, it has been much too long since you've last graced our airwaves. I just wanted to start with this. Last week, Paul, we had a fantastic conversation with Paul O'Sullivan, the founder and CEO of Changing the Game Project. And, you know, in that conversation, he brought up the initiatives and some of the great initiatives that Hockey Canada has taken on over the years to, you know, just educate and steer people in the right direction. And one of the things he mentioned was the It's Just a Game program, you know, Relax, It's Just a Game program that Hockey Canada initiated, I believe, in the early 2000s with a series of just fantastic yet powerful videos.
Well, first off, John's a wonderful guy, and I love his initiative. I'm a big fan of Change the Game Project. I've spoken to John a couple of times. We've never actually spent time together in person. We gave John permission to use some of that content in a TED Talk a number of years ago. But Relax, It's Just a Game was just a wonderful campaign, and it marked my start at Hockey Canada, because you're right, it goes back to the early 2000s. In 2002, 2003, that season, we worked with a firm out of Vancouver, DDB, and, you know, they were award-winning in terms of the work they were doing, and they came to us and said, hey, we'd really like to help you in your messaging around, you know, really getting families to be a little more centered in the type of experience their kids should have in sport. And we took that tongue-in-cheek approach where what if kids were to pressure their parents when they were involved in activities? Everything from the youngster in the backseat chirping his dad who was getting a speeding ticket to the little girl in the supermarket who wanted her mom to fight someone who crashed into her buggy. And that was just such a great start for me. I mean, I'd spent a lot of time in my volunteer roles with Hockey Canada, but as a full-time director of development at the time and being on the set for those initiatives, I was really proud of the work that was done. And we got such a popular response. And I should tell you that even Oprah Winfrey aired one of the commercials and talked about the initiative and the focus on bringing sport back to the ownership of children.
Such a great initiative. And Paul, to enter Hockey Canada at that time, and Hockey Canada, world renowned for its innovation, what a great experience that must have been to actually have a good look at what Hockey Canada was all about and where it was going. What was it like stepping in at that point in time?
Well, it was an interesting time because we'd done a lot of good work through the 90s and just leading into the 2000s. Done a lot of good work. If you remember the Nike Skills Project, which mm-hmm. now is called the Hockey Canada Skills Manuals, they were all done through the early part of the 90s, probably the mid-90s. We were right there in Edmonton filming Skills of Gold at Rexall Place. That was our home for two summers as we did all of those skill development videos. In the probably the first 4 or 5 years that I was at Hockey Canada, those were landmark projects. It just the milestones that just kind of heaped on from one after the other. It was really cool, and it was really exciting to be a part of all of those things, to see, you know, what the opportunity was. And I know you have him right there in Edmonton now, Bob Nicholson. You know, his leadership at that time, really encouraging those types of development initiatives. That was really special for us.
No question about it. We're talking with Paul Carson, the Vice President of Membership Development for Hockey Canada. You know, such great initiatives and very innovative for the time. And I will say this, probably one of the leading sporting organizations, even today, in terms of progressive thinking. And one of the conversations that came up last week, Paul, when we spoke with John O'Sullivan from Changing the Game Project, was the concern out of the over the dropout rates we're seeing in organized sports. 7 of 10 kids dropping out by the age of 13. It's a very concerning area for developmental sport. And we know this is an area that Hockey Canada has addressed with interest.
Well, it is. Keeping kids in sport is key, not the sport. We don't see ourselves as the only sport. And I think that over the past number of years, people have really accepted the response that we've had, along with other major sports in Canada, to start to partner, to start to align with one another and create a really strong dialogue toward multi-sport participation. I could tell you, for example, just this spring we had a national seminar around the initiation program and all the delivery mechanisms, and one of the keynotes was Jason DeVos, who's the technical director for Soccer Canada, longtime professional soccer player, member of Team Canada. You have somebody from another sport as a keynote talking to your membership about small spaces and, you know, 3-on-3, 5-on-5, 7-on-7, you know, really shrinking the numbers and really focusing on skill development and his experience in Europe. And people are surprised a little bit by that. But at the same time, you know, I'm willing to chat with people like John O'Sullivan any day of the week. We're very good friends with the folks at USA Hockey and the work that they've been doing in all of the development areas. Mm-hmm. I just think that collaborative competition is such a positive way to approach building on your game, making your game stronger, making sports stronger. And, you know, you and I have run into each other at a couple of conferences, and I know that, you know, you have a similar feeling that, you know, I see a number of sports that are very, very beneficial to the skill development of young hockey players, but more about the athleticism and the development of fundamental skills that kids need to be successful young athletes.
Yeah, I agree. And Hockey Canada has taken, I think, another great initiative, along with Baseball Canada and a number of other sports, you know, encouraging, you know, maybe cross-training or complementary sports during the off-season. Hockey Canada a few years ago came out with the top summer sports for hockey players, sports like lacrosse, soccer, of course, is in there, baseball, team handball, the racket sports. I think that's just a great message to send, you know, coming from Hockey Canada, encouraging other sports. It's okay to go out and play other sports. And at the end of the day, what we know from developmental science and athlete development, at the end, it's really, really beneficial for athletes in the long haul.
Well, one thing's for certain that, you know, science will tell us that hockey is a late development sport.
Right.
People think that there's a real sprint to get to a very skilled level at a very young age and then to, you know, overcompensate to maintain those skills by participating in that sport 12 months of the year. And I can't put a definitive age on it, but if youngsters under the age of 13 or 14 are playing hockey 12 months of the year and double dipping into development programs through the winter while they're competing with their team. That's overtraining. That's really too much of one sport, and it's not too much of a good thing. It is a bad thing, and we need for people to understand that broadening the base of sport participation, broadening the experiences at the young age, helps athletes in a lot of ways. Not just in their athletic ability, but it also helps them to build a core stability that prevents injuries. That goes a long way to helping them in terms of should injuries occur, that they rehab quicker. There are just so many things to consider in building that broader base of experience. We just hope that through other sport alignments, and you mentioned us talking about summer sports that complement hockey. That was a partnership with Active for Life, which I believe is a tremendous website and resource tool right there in Banff, Alberta. There, Richard Manette does a fantastic job with that group. And you know, there is a wealth of resources available for people. A lot of times when I go do presentations now, I just tell people, like, all you have to do is think keywords, go on Google and do a search. Overuse injuries, early sports specialization. Just if you want to answer any of those questions, just go online, type those search terms, and you will find research, you will find position papers, and you will find great websites that support you, similar to the Changing the Game website.
Yeah, fantastic stuff, and a lot of great information out there. And, of course, the Hockey Canada website is no exception. We're talking with Paul Carson, the Vice President of Membership Development for Hockey Canada. Well, you know, along the lines of innovations and not fearing change, Hockey Canada leads the way there as well. And, you know, recently in the past few years, with everything we're learning about head injuries, sport in general is taking a turn based on what we've learned. And I really like the idea. You know, I know it was maybe a tough push early on, Paul, but the body checking ban for the younger ages was met with mixed emotions and mixed feelings when it first came on. Let's maybe just revisit that right now in retrospect. And how has that turned out so far? I know it was quite a hot button topic when it was going down.
Well, it's interesting because we actually continue to work with Carolyn Emery's groups out of Calgary. Mm-hmm. I know that there's Brent Hagel in Edmonton. There's a group in Quebec. And we continue to study after the change to see what the rates of injuries are, to really understand the impact of that decision. And it's not just about injuries. It's about skill development. It's about building confidence in young players. So there were a lot of factors at play, and I don't want us to think that the rate of injuries increases, so let's make a change and not be prepared for some of the unintended consequences that might come, because we need to look at so many different aspects of the child's development in sport, and certainly the enjoyment for every child. Now, I really feel that was, like you say, it was an emotional decision, but it was one based in a lot of understanding, a lot of research, some solid position papers, and from our perspective, we've lived through some, you know, real interesting times as we've made changes to the game, and we're continuing to make changes to the game. We're continuing to fine-tune it, and it's all within the spirit of making sure that it's a safe, positive, and fun environment for every youngster that comes to the game. You look at the game at the highest levels, you see a very physical game, both in the women's game and the men's game. There's no question that as a contact sport, you're going to have that level of intensity at the higher levels. What you need to do with youngsters in the game, starting as early as 5 and 6, is teaching the skills of angling, positioning, contact confidence, body contact. And through that progressive skill teaching, you hope that they're also developing the offensive skills, the defensive skills, and they're not encumbered by the fear of body checking at too young of an age. And so it's a nice progression, and we're seeing the skill level of players coming into the game today. We're starting to see players come into the game today at the NHL level who are 19 and 20 years of age, who didn't start body checking until Pee Wee, and now we're going to start seeing players coming into the NHL who didn't start body checking until Bantam. I mean, that's, we made that decision 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's a great move, and I like it based on what we know, and it's turned out to be the right decision, and we continue to learn, don't we?
Oh, we do. Change is tough, and the traditional way in the approach to the game is one that's a little hard to stray from. People want to see, for example, at the 5 and 6 year old age level, they want to see full ice hockey. They want to see the score clock. They may want to see referees on the ice and face offs and strategies. And we just feel like we look at the benefits of shrinking the space. We call it decrease the space, increase the pace. Giving kids the opportunity for more puck touches, more shots on goals, more goals scored, more pass attempts, more pass receptions. The analytics are out there. We have the information that says skill development increases at a younger age when the number of elements in the game increase as well. And when youngsters have control of the puck for longer periods of time, when youngsters are forced to make decisions in smaller spaces, then all kids are engaged and the level of fun and excitement is actually at a higher level. And so, you know, even when we make those kind of changes and going to cross ice hockey this year and, you know, hearing the resistance, we still stay true to what we believe, which is we're doing it in the best interest of young players and their development plan.
Yeah, I like the idea of the cross-ice hockey ball. It makes a lot of sense. More touches, more action, and a space that's actually more conducive to those small little bodies. It just seems right across the board when we look at it from, you know, maybe a holistic standpoint.
Well, there's no question. You talk to pro players, you talk to national women's team players, they'll tell you that most of the work is done in small areas. And coaches at that level, everything they do is small area games, small space drills, because what they're really trying to do is focus on, you know, skills around the puck, both on the puck and away from the puck. And it's tight. It's a very, very tight game. And so giving kids too much ice at a young age just allows for the very skilled players to pull away from the pack, and the kids that aren't developing skills at the same rate to slow their skill development. And we think that by dropping the space down and making it more age appropriate and more skill specific, that those youngsters are going to learn at a faster rate.
Well, we've seen great things coming out of small space training in the game of soccer, and I think it certainly makes a lot of sense here. And, you know, even in baseball, we're seeing smaller diamonds being made, lighter baseballs, lighter baseball bats. You know, we're adapting the game for the players so they can have more success. And let's face it, when you're having success, it's a little more fun for the young athlete.
Well, you can imagine, I started teaching a number of years ago, and I was in an elementary school. We had the smaller gym floor. We had lower hoops for volleyball. We had lower nets. So, you know, I was already aware of all of the modifications made to the game so that kids could be more successful. If you've got a 12-foot hoop and you've got a little guy with a full-size ball, he can't even get the ball to the hoop. Even from underneath the hoop. So every sport has looked at how they need to adjust the space. I think that hockey has a difficulty in that we can't just make rinks smaller. We actually have to manage the space that we're given in creative ways. So we appreciate that people will come into a rink and it's 200 by 85 and they'll say, well, why aren't we using the full ice surface? We'd like four teams to be on the ice and we'd like to split the ice in half. So, you know, it is one of those situations where you see soccer fields are marked a little smaller. You see lacrosse played in a smaller space. So we're trying to make those same moves. And we've made those recommendations for 30 years. It's time to say, you know what, we're not going to recommend it anymore. We're going to mandate this position, and we need to make sure that our membership understands that this is in the best interest of players and player skill development.
Oh, great stuff. We're talking with Paul Carson, Vice President of Membership Development for Hockey Canada. Well, a big weekend for you guys as everybody converges on Newfoundland for the annual meetings, Paul. Can we get an inside glimpse at what might come out of this weekend?
Well, we're going to review everything we've done around the initiation program. Now we're going to start looking at the novice age group, but we are trying to really focus our attention on age-appropriate, skill-specific development for kids at every age level, and we'll just continue to work on fine-tuning the resources. We believe we have some of the best resources in the world for coaches. We need to spend more time. We have a program, an app for the cell phone and smartphones and tablets called the Hockey Canada Network, which is not only a great communication tool to push great messaging out to hockey parents, but it's a great coaching tool because you can design practices, you can pull off ready-made practice plans. So we're going to spend some time really, again, focusing our membership on that, because we do need to spend time educating our membership on the tools that are available to them and to their members, and then use that same model of them going into their AGM. So in Alberta, for example, Hockey Alberta would do the same thing at their AGM coming up in June, where they would spend time with their membership really drilling down on where we're going with programs, taking a real close look at them, and then looking at the resources that are available to support programs.
Oh, Paul Carson, so great. You know, the way technology is changing how we can now address and help families, parents, coaches, and young athletes develop is amazing. I mean, I remember the Skills of Gold DVD set, and I thought that was the cat's meow cutting edge back in the day. But when we look at the technology available now, boy, oh boy, it really does open doors.
Well, and we, you know, just as you mentioned Skills of Gold, we were able to put Skills of Gold right into the Hockey Canada Network app and now push the video out in that manner. So, you know, we really encourage people to take a look at that app and consider the resource that's available to them as coaches. And you know, those are the kind of tools that we think make things so much more efficient and effective for coaches in the game today.
Great stuff, Paul Carson. Well, listen, I really appreciate your time today. I know it's very busy for everybody there. Good luck this weekend, and we'll look forward to following up to see what comes out of this weekend and what's on the horizon for hockey. Thanks so much, Paul.
Okay, look forward to talking again soon, Jeff.
There you go. A fantastic conversation with our good friend Paul Carson, the Vice President of Membership Development for Hockey Canada. Hockey Canada is one of those organizations that is constantly looking to get better, looking for new and better ways to do things. And I really like the idea of sharing information. This inter-organizational sharing of information is just, I think, the way of the future for sport and sport performance. Paul mentioned their meetings with the soccer associations, looking at what soccer is doing to innovate and push their game forward. Is there something to learn there? You better believe it. If you go back a couple of weeks, we did a very, very cool show where we talked with the Kansas City Royals and the development guys from the Edmonton Oilers in the NHL. They got together in January to share information, and we visited with both those organizations about their takeaways, and it was interesting to hear what they had to say. And I think this can happen right down to the grassroots. Well, it is happening because Hockey Canada is doing it. A great organization. Their website, hockeycanada.ca, is fantastic. There's a lot of resources there for parents if you're involved in hockey, but just in general, if you're a coach or an athlete in another sport, it might be worthy of a look because there's a lot of great innovative things going on there. So, great show today. We got to get out. We're almost out of time. Have to thank Manny Schmidt of Link Management International for coming on the show. Also, Paul Carson, the Vice President of Membership Development for Hockey Canada. Two great, fantastic conversations today. We have to thank both of those true pros in their fields of expertise. Coming up next week, we're going to shift gears and focus a little bit more on baseball. Listen, baseball is plagued with injuries, and the dropout rates are there as well. We do know when teams in an area are winning, kids want to get involved in sport. But how do we keep our kids safe from injury? Injury is one of the number one reasons kids stop playing sport. It's also maybe the number one reason that an athlete never reaches his or her potential. We're going to talk about keeping kids in the game, keeping them safe in development, and we're going to visit with our good friend Gift Ngope, the first African-born player to play Major League Baseball. Back in late April, Gift stepped on a Major League field for the Pittsburgh Pirates for the very first time. We're going to talk to Gift about his story of true grit and perseverance, where he came from, the path he took to get to the major leagues and why quitting just wasn't an option. I can't wait for that conversation. I hope you'll join us, and I hope you'll tell your friends about it, because this will be a conversation everybody needs to hear. That'll be next week on Crush Performance. We'll talk to you then.